All right, good afternoon, everyone. I have an amazing personality today, someone who has been through the thick and thin of public service in Lagos State and specifically in Lagos State University. In no other person than the highly reputable, very amazing, very amiable, my very own special uncle, Mr. Akinwunmi Oladapo-Lewis. You're welcome to the Debut Highway Talk Show, sir.
Thank you very much, Bebo.
You're
Hope you're
welcome.
doing well.
I am. I'm doing pretty well. It's so nice. I'm highly honored, and I count this as a privilege to have you on to grace your presence on this show with me. Yes, sir. We're gonna dive in really quick, just to kind of touch base with you. I am amazed actually at your career. You were able to grow your career from you rose through the ranks probably as an administrative officer, one or two, up until the position of the registrar. Can you walk us through how you were able to excel, how you got to the pinnacle of your career? Because obviously you went to University of Ibadan, and I think you studied history, if I'm correct.
Yeah, absolutely
And
correct.
back in the day, as a student in University of Ibadan, did you see yourself achieving the heights that you achieved eventually as a registrar of Lagos State University?
Absolutely no. Apparently, what I had at the back of my mind as a career was to be a lawyer or to end up being an academic. And yeah, immediately I finished and I concluded my service year. I went back to University of Ibadan and I wanted to study an aspect of history, European diplomacy. And I wanted to focus on the Soviet Union. I wanted to focus on the Soviet Union. But I guess because the old world, most Nigerian universities which we consider as appendages to the British system of education did not want to touch that aspect of history. So I just left. I didn't even bother exploring any other aspect of history, like African history, Yoruba history, or whatever. And I became a secondary school classroom teacher. So
Can I ask though, why were you specifically interested in Soviet Union? Obviously, I knew that USSR, broke probably around 89, 90, 91-ish. But what was your specific reason for wanting to study more about that, about USSR and Soviet Union?
yeah, from what we learned while studying European diplomatic scene, I found out that it was only the Soviet Union that its revolution was populist in nature and had an ideology of socialism where everybody, regardless of your station in life, could have a quality life, could have a quality life. Though recent history developments in the then Soviet Union has proved beyond reasonable doubt that people are sane, regardless of wherever you find them, because the Bolshevik Revolution of 1907 or thereabout, under the leadership of Lenin, wanted to see a just society. But by the time Stalin took over, it became more or less like a dictator, and the kind of segregation that you will find in capitalist environment were very visible, were very, very visible. So I just got that it could have been a futile, if I'd had the opportunity, it would have been a futile and
Yeah, I mean, a
one could have
futile.
become effort and one could have become a discontented academic because it will not say why. So not even with the not even with Perestroika and Glasnost that led to the breaking down of the entire Soviet Union into splinter states where that, but again it was a good attempt at wanting to do something.
Yeah.
But I also want to believe that Providence just didn't want me to go that way.
Interesting, interesting. And Providence definitely plays a big role in shaping humans' life eventually. And just for viewers who know, USSR at the time eventually would break into countries like Russia, like Yugoslavia, eventually Ukraine, Croatia, and a lot of other countries. So many countries broke out of from the defunct USSR at the time. Just before we touch into a couple of things we want to talk about today, are you happy with the position that history is holding in Nigeria today? I mean, you are a first, a BS, sorry, Bachelor of Arts graduate of history. And even today, in some secondary schools or in most secondary schools in Nigeria, history is not being taught. What's your position around history being taught, and do you think it's good that we are not teaching history in our schools?
To be honest with you, when history was cracked, I looked at the government of the day as being unserious and having a hidden agenda in wanting to do what, in wanting to make people, the entire citizenry, to becoming misinformed about who they are, who their ancestors were, who the leaders prior to our own existence were, and how they were able to build Nigeria to what they inherited. Because there is no how you teach government, there is no how you study political science that you will not put work, that you will not study history, because political science actually was part of history. It's like talking about
part of history.
Yes, it evolved outside of history. It evolved outside of history. It's like talking about economics, having commerce evolving out of it, having banking and finance evolving, having accounting evolving out of it. So there's no way people will teach political science that you will not make reference to history. But we thank God that they've had a rethink and it's coming back.
Oh.
Because whether you like it or not, you need the past to actually navigate the present. Navigate the present. That is, if you want a better future.
Yeah.
And let's see how it goes.
Yeah.
Let's see how it goes. Because even globally, more often than not, people study history for leisure now. People study history for leisure now.
Yes.
Most Nigerian universities, you will hardly find people going to study history. No. Where you find people studying history now is where it has become a twin course, a double honors course, history and international relations.
Yeah.
You find universities, history and philosophy, history and political science. So the combination of two distinct courses
is now
exciting
for people
so
to
that if you study history and international relations, you don't have to be a classroom teacher. You can actually go into foreign service.
All right. So hopefully the government of the day would listen to some of this clarion calls people have been making for a while now. And hopefully history returns back to the secondary school so people can learn their past, they can navigate the present, and then, of course, it will shape the future. Thank you very much for your kind words and words of wisdom. Now we proceed. Can you share with us how you grew your career, a career that a lot of people might have been enviable of, or so a lot of people might have wished that they got. It seemed like you were dexed at some point. Of course, I lived with you at some point and I remember those days. It seemed like you were destined to become the registrar of Lagos State University at some point. It seemed like it was going to be your turn. It was like Emilio Kong at a point. How would you say you walked through your way to become the registrar of Lagos State University?
Well, like I said earlier on, I taught for 3 years in a secondary school, and whilst there, a different uncharted community, which was in the riverine within our job landscape, I discovered that the opportunity I had with regards to my education wasn't the same opportunity these children were having. And there was nothing those teachers could teach them that these children could assimilate. Essentially, these were students, the majority of them were those who were sponsoring their education. They're looking at an Awori community where the fathers will always have children and they want the mothers to train their children. I had pupils who immediately after school would have to go and fish, would have to go and farm, would have to go and weave mat, would have to go and pluck coconuts. They were fending for themselves to the extent that when they come back the following day,
they're tired, they're exhausted.
They're not only tired, what you thought you had impacted the previous day was already gone.
They can't remember.
Because they didn't have the opportunity of sitting down studying. So what did I do? I left home, I left the comfort of my home in Apapa, and I moved down to the River Rhine. So what was I doing? I was visiting the respective villages that constituted that school.
Wow.
And I was appealing to their parents, that please, I've seen this and that. Can you always allow these children to leave home as early as 6:30, come to school by 7:30, I would have taken them through a lot of subjects. I was teaching literature in English. I taught government. I taught history, my major subject. I taught them literature in English. I was teaching like about 7 to 8 subjects, which I was very, very versed in. I haven't done them at A levels, at A levels. And by the time the other teachers come from the mainland, around 9 o'clock, I will have impacted 2 hours
of
the lives of these children.
Yeah.
And since they didn't have to go back home by boat, they're going to work, I will still ask them that, is it possible for them to stay back for another hour? And I'll take them lesson. And it was pro bono. It was pro bono. But even at that, I reap the rewards. The rewards, they will bring fresh fish, all sorts of things, to the extent that we became integrated into a family. And I must say that some of them now who are doing very well, one of them is a member of House of Assembly, Lagos State.
Wow, that's impressive.
A couple of them have been chairmen of local government. Some are present, and they're doing well. They're doing well. Some are even in LASU at the level of principal assistant registrar. And find them there. Wow. So by 1993, I had to leave because I felt that I've seen it all and I've been able to raise the first generation of graduates from that secondary school who will do well. I also exposed them. I also exposed them rather than living and staying back in the riverine area. Weekends, maybe once every month, we'll just get a boat. I'll bring them to the mainland. I'll take them to Apapa, the port. I'll take them to some interesting places in Lagos that
just
they
to
never
expose
seen.
Them just to expose them to what other side of Lagos
look,
is like.
Exactly, that this education, if you are very serious with it, these are the kind of things, these are the kind of places you find yourself in future, and you're very happy for it. So between 1993 and 1994, before joining LASU, I did what? I strayed into the financial sector. That was the period of all these financial houses here and there. I worked with one for about 10 months before coming to LASU.
Okay.
And when I joined LASU, LASU was just coming out of a serious crisis that consumed it for like about 2 years. There was a crisis in 1991, and that crisis did not abate until 1992. So by 1993, it had consumed some people who decided that we're not going to work in LASU again. So there were vacancies, and there was need to quickly fill
up
those vacancies.
I
was one of the very few who had the opportunity of getting to LASU then. So my trajectory, when I got to LASU, ordinarily, I've been putting 4 years post-qualification. I was supposed to have been elevated. But because Besides, there was no vacancy. I had to start all over. So those 4 years' experience were considered as nothing.
As nothing.
But within 6 months, there was an opening with the advertised. And out of the four of us that were offered temporary appointment at that time, I was the only one who responded to that advert. So by September of 1994, I had become senior to three of my colleagues who
and you joined on the same day.
Who were my seniors. So in all of these, I ensured that I invested in my training and development.
Okay.
I spent personal money in being member of professional associations where I could learn a lot of things.
Mm.
And there was hardly any year that would not find me in the UK attending AUA, formerly AUA, Association of University Administrators,
okay.
which has now become metamorphosed into Association of Higher Education Professionals, AHEP.
Mm. Mm.
So I was always investing and I was also networking. Because at some fora, you will meet colleagues from other universities in Nigeria who are your seniors and who could mentor you.
Yeah.
So I was administrative officer one. Within a year or thereabout, another advertisement came out for the position of assistant registrar, which was higher than three of us competed. There were two amongst us then who had been in the system before me. I guess those were the people that were being targeted for the position.
Mm.
But during the interview, I came first, so they had to do what? They had to throw away the old thing.
Mm.
But not so, yes. So I got promoted to assistant registrar. But it will shock you that I only earned two promotions in the course of my career in LASU.
Mm.
The rest were by fresh appointments.
Interesting. So,
I take risk
mm.
that others would not want to venture into. I take risk. But in the process of risk taking, I was also upskilling myself.
Mm.
I was developing myself so that at every point in time, when I appear before a panel, things that I will make available as information or answers to questions baffle most of my colleagues, senior colleagues.
Mm.
So, and the moment I found myself in that environment, I'd already made up my mind that I wanted to make the best
out
of that career. So it became what? It became this thing. What actually drives me, motivates me that I want to be the best amongst my colleagues.
Among your colleagues.
So,
impressive.
That was by 2014. Apparently, I had a first shot in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
That 2010, I was considered too young. There was somebody who had just 4 years before retirement, retiring from the system, that they felt that, okay, let it be a parting gift for that person.
Mm.
You understand? But in 2014, I was interviewed for that position and I emerged as a registrar of Lagos State University.
Mm. We give glory to God. I remember very well 2010. Like I said earlier, you know, I was privileged to live with you under your abode at that time. You took me in as your son even, and I remember that situation. But at least at the end of the day, at God's appointed time, which was 2014, you were able to get it, and I believe that your tenure was really impactful to the university. We'll touch on that in a bit, but I wanted to ask a question around some of the things you said as you grew your careers into. So two questions I would ask was, first, you said you only got promoted twice during the length of your career from when you started to becoming a registrar. Ideally, what would be the number of years that you'd have spent in a position before you get promoted? That's question number one. Then question number two, so we just make it double barrel. How were you able to manage your relationships with senior colleagues or people who had joined the system earlier than you, and You seem like you were rising, and they probably had to start reporting to you at some point. How were you able to manage those relationships?
Thank you very much, Ibo. Statutorily, you have to mature on every step, every level you are. If you start out as an admin officer too, you will need to spend the next 3 years, maturation period, that is as contained in the books, before you move. So between admin officer two to assistant registrar, it is expected that you must have put in 6 years. Becoming a senior assistant registrar, you must have put in 9 years. Becoming a principal assistant registrar, then that's 12 years. But to become a deputy registrar, as at the time I started out, that was not by promotion, it was by appointment. And that is what obtains in most public universities in Nigeria.
Okay.
That position is a management position, because whosoever emerges or is appointed as a deputy registrar is also a potential registrar of that university.
Okay.
So during our period, it was by appointment until 2018 or thereabout, when the whole thing was so. Then, like I said, there are two pathways to advancement, either by promotion or by appointment. I always did what I always seized every opportunity I had with both hands. While some would tell me that, oh, it's not going to fly. When I get there, I want to see if it's going to fly or not going to fly. That is my own, and it has helped me. It has worked. But again, too, I just believe strongly that God deliberately decided to continually compensate me for the 4 years that were counted as nothing, and for the mere fact that ordinarily I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. It's like faith without work is dead.
Yeah.
God knew that I have faith in him and that I'm always doing what, putting that faith to work.
Impressive.
Secondly, the second aspect, how was I able to relate? I had a very good relationship with some of them because I did not belong to any camp.
Okay.
There were camps and there are still camps, but I made up my mind that rather than belonging to a camp, I'd rather fly alone.
As an eagle.
Yes. However, I was always making difference, and I was very humble, still humble.
Yeah.
To everybody, if a senior colleague whom I met as a senior colleague and whom I, by providence, left behind, walks up to me for anything, I will stand up for wherever I am. Or if that person picks a call, picks his phone and calls me, what I'll do is that, don't worry, man. Don't worry, sir. Where can I meet up with you? I'll walk straight to that person's office. And I did that throughout my tenure as a registrar at Lagos State University. I never at any point in time allowed any of my senior colleagues to come looking for me. I was always going there to look for them. I didn't see any thing out of the ordinary concerning it, because I feel strongly that God just wanted me to be there. And at a point in time, I'm going to do what? I'm going to come down from downstairs saddle. Someone else is going to occupy it. So it's not an overship stool that until one dies. Do you understand? So all these things have always been there, and it was very, some didn't like, some did not like. Some did not like it. But eventually, they had to admit that they had never had the kind of relationship that we built, even being at the ends of registry affair.
That's impressive. You took, I was going to ask you a question. I was going to ask a question around humility before I proceeded to a few questions, because apparently I know you, at least on a personal level. I know you're very amiable. But again, when people rise to the pinnacle of their careers. Like you said, some people don't get to realize that some of these positions are temporary. It's only royalty to a large extent that it's there till you pass. How were you able to manage your humility? I'm going to quote you directly. So very recently on a doctor's post on Facebook, who put up a tribute to a late professor that passed on from Faculty of Science about 7 years ago. You commented on that post recently, saying he always called you by your first name, even apparently when this person in question died, you were the registrar of Lagos State University. How were you able to manage your humility? What made you remain humble in that position as registrar?
Well, I'm sure you must have been talking about Professor Omikore
Wale Omikore.
Ebenezer
Yes, Wale.
Wale Omikore, a very lovable, unpretentious, plain human being. He was full of integrity. His word was his bond. We have known each other, but I first met him when I was a straddler in the university administration. I think I was admin officer one then. I just met him at the corridors, Faculty of Science, then and that. And I was talking to some other academics who knew me. They said, "Who is that Oshi boy that you people are talking to?" That was Professor Wole Obikoride Alijesha man to the core. And he will tell you, well, I used to tease him that Egbon, and the next will be like, could it will shake me? You know? And we got along very easily to the extent that there was hardly anything he wanted done administratively. He would call to seek my opinion. That by the time I became, and we started building it up like that, by the time I became the registrar, even before I became the registrar, deputy registrar academic, there were issues with his promotion to professor. The papers were being delayed unnecessarily, and I was like, "Edmond, don't worry. If I can have access to who and who the people that, and I did what I could do. I didn't bend, I didn't break laws. I tried as much as possible to ensure that those assessors got his papers in on time so that he could become a professor." And he was very close to Professor Damolaoke.
Of course.
There were five and six.
Of course.
Professor Damolaoke, the former deputy vice chancellor of administration. And at every point in time, if he comes to my office, if he enters my office from outside, we say, "I know that he's your registrar, but he's acting, he's inside the office." And people say, "But that's registrar." I say, "I want to see if I call him back in, if he will not answer me." And I'll just stand up and say, "Edmond, you have started again." And that was how it was, that it was very painful when I heard of his death. I was in UK, my usual annual leave, but I thank God that I came back on time to be part of his burial ceremony, everything. And you still have few good men. You still have few good men.
Impressive.
He was one of
May he continue to rest in peace. He was definitely a jolly good fellow for sure.
That was.
We're not so, we don't have so much time, so I'm gonna just move up as quick as we can. I wanted to
Okay.
ask you, so when it comes to legacy, as you already got to the pinnacle of your career, you got to the position of registrar, what do you think is your lasting legacy or your legacy as a registrar at the time?
Oh, thank you very much. Concerning legacy, I want to look at it from the perspective of that same trajectory. Without being immodest, my proactive nature, right from the time I was middle-level administrator, helped the university with regards to the establishment of Faculty of Management Sciences.
It's impressive.
Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah. That period, I think that was in 1998. That period, 1998, precisely, the NUC team came for the usual accreditation exercise.
Okay.
And they voted amongst other faculties, Faculty of Social Sciences. That faculty was the most unwieldy, unruly, and if I use a catastrophic faculty in Lagos State University at that time. A department, in a department alone, a department of economics, they had over 3,000 students.
In one department, that's huge.
That department had units. Accounting units, banking and finance units. You see, biz admin units and all whatnot. All because people wanted to make money. Now, is it that it was not good? Great. So when NUC came, there was this woman, she's now late, Mrs. Ozibu. Mrs. Ozibu was the secretary, the person who was to cover the activities throughout the day. But unfortunately, the Saturday that they were having their exit meeting, Ozibu was not available. I was in my office inside that old Senate building. Someone just came and knocked at the door. And it was my late registrar, Mr. Amisu Olabi Amisu. I said, please, how are you doing? I came to work. I was now asked to clerk the meeting. After clerking the meeting, I got it up, everything. I kept it. So when they now got to Senate, and the issue of establishment of a new faculty started and all what that, those people in that faculty did not want it to happen. They didn't want another faculty. I just went straight to the registrar, the late, both of them are late now, sir. Remember that you asked me to clerk this meeting. Can I go and bring the minutes of that exit meeting so that it will help Senate? The man gave this part to the vice chancellor. The vice chancellor, please, go and get that. When I got the document, the man looked at it and the man asked that it should be circulated.
Interesting.
That was how they took that decision, the floor of Senate. And they now split that faculty into two. Faculty of Management Sciences
and then
to have accounting, public administration, banking and finance, business admin, insurance, IRPM.
Industrial relations are possible.
Later on that, I think two other programs now have to join afterward. And I was compensated. I was made the secretary of the steering committee. Moved that faculty, and then I became this what I became a foundation faculty officer.
That is one.
Yes. And then when I became the foundation faculty officer, the first set of admission that took place, I discovered a lot of discrepancies. That was when things were still being done manually. I keep records a lot. So if you want to deal with me, you must have it at the back of your mind that this guy may have records with regards to what we are discussing. Because records don't lie.
Yeah.
I had the list of those admitted signed by the vice chancellor with me, and I was always using it to cross-check. The clearance that were being brought to me. And at the end of it, I discovered 201 illegal admission. And I escalated it. All the 201 were sent away.
Great.
Unfortunately, those lecturers who perpetrated that evil were not sent away. I consider it as a legacy as well. Then, when I became the registrar, we started out registry management meeting, made up of the registrar and all the deputy registrars, as it were. I also ensured that round pegs were put in round holes. There's no way you'll be a junior registry staff that I'll ask you to go and head a division. I ensured that all the deputy registrars were first and foremost put where they should be. And then this principal assistant registrar, I also ensured that in order of seniority, that was how I was posting them. Some people didn't like it because it was also an avenue for some people to make money and all whatnot, either legitimately or illegitimately. But I don't really care. Finally, my loyalty to any principal officer, especially the vice chancellor of the university, can never be doubted. Professor, the late Professor Hussein, I wouldn't know if you were, okay, you were already.
I was in 100 level when he became vice chancellor of the State University.
When he was to be killed on campus, I wasn't on campus. When I got the news, I had to place a call to a higher authority. Tunde Fashola was the governor then, who had to come and find a way of rescuing him. Till the man died.
He was eternally grateful to you.
To me, yes. I did the same thing to my former principal, to Professor Obafua. You know, unfortunately, when people have good legacies, because of the preponderance of those who don't like doing things based on rules and regulations, who do not like to conform. When you find them at the corridors of power, the very first thing they do is that they will dismantle. And that is what Nigeria,
it's
that
first.
You know, is noted for. And that is why we are where we are till now. I
Uncle,
feel bad.
1 minute. Sorry, Uncle. Sorry, Uncle. Just 1 minute. I'm going to have...
Okay.
Perfect. Perfect. So, yes. Prior, we were talking about your legacy and then... Obviously, you were talking based on how the, you know, how it seemed, you know, the kind of system that we operate back home in Nigeria and how people don't like to follow rules and regulations. And that was where we kind of stopped. And obviously, I think for like the 3-4 points where you kind of like kick started or facilitated the independence or the separation of Faculty of Management Sciences from Social Sciences, that was one. And you talked about your unparalleled loyalty towards principal officers, specifically vice chancellors, and you gave specific examples along that lines. And you also talked about how you were able to detect some some fraudulent activities happening as it concerns admissions in Lagos State University at the time. And those points are definitely impressive. They have huge legacy contributions to where Lagos State University is today. And again, I want to say thank you for your presence today. We will continue to have some of these conversations. And I wanted to ask as well, when it concerns university reforms, if you could implement any reform in Nigerian university, what would they be and why? In like two or three.
When it concerns university what?
Reforms. If there's any reform, so when it concerns university, if you could implement any reforms in Nigerian universities, what would it be and why?
Essentially, not the only constant thing. Consequently, also do what you must also do as much as possible to evolve based on our own capacities. First and foremost, most universities in developed countries, nations, run seamlessly using modern technology. The interface between students and the faculty is so restricted that more often than not, a typical undergraduate from Oxford University will never know who the vice chancellor is, who the registrar is. No, they don't have any business with all those people. Because at the point of enrollment, it is by internet interface, to the point of graduation or everything. Students go to classes for lectures. After that, They submit their what? They submit assignments online. The lecturers grade assignments online. And this allows for what? It allows for you to cut costs. It allows for efficiency. It allows for efficiency. And it allows for a workforce that is compact, that you do not have to be expending unnecessary funds on personnel. Personnel. In most Nigerian universities, especially public universities, you find people who do not even have any business of either being a lecturer or a non-teaching staff at the university because they do not want, they don't add value. But again, when you look at our political, social, economic disposition, this inbreeding kind of thing that this person is a member of our family, he's been looking for a job, therefore I must say, and it is not only about the university. Don't get me wrong. You find it elsewhere.
It's everywhere.
But the university being an ivory tower should be what? Should lead in the way it conducts its business and activities. It is a university, a community of scholars. Would be scholars who are to interrogate themselves and things around them with a view to coming up with solutions. We are supposed to be we are supposed to be problem solvers. How many Nigerian universities can you make claim that it's a problem solver? Now, gone were the days in the 70s and the 80s, universities of Ibadan, Benin, University of Lagos, Ife, they had great academics of international repute.
Yes.
Who had presence in global communities of academics. What do you have now? Somebody will tell me that is an academic, is world renowned, and it is Alaba. Alaba Lago that will be used as what? Demography, where he or she's going to collect data. No. The world is moving. We need to move beyond all this nonsense. How many of LASU's graduates or graduates of public schools in Nigeria, do not need retraining before they can be accepted in foreign countries? Because they have to be, because how we do things here is totally absurd. It is archaic.
Yeah.
It is archaic. You get to a university abroad with your ID card, you can make business transactions in the bank. You will use it to open doors. That same card, access card, will be for your hostel door, will be for your library. That is what you're going to use. And the moment the session ends and you have not paid again, that card will not work again.
It's invalid.
And these are technologies that have been in existence 30, 25 years ago. We are still doing what? We find it difficult to even produce something. Students are having issues, or graduates are having issues with certificates and all whatnot. An average time of processing a transcript should not be more than 48 hours. Because if that student's academic profile is already on the database, you need to just recall and send it to the appropriate, and that thing is done. Nobody touches anything. Nobody can tamper with anything. And the next thing is you sign electronically and you send to the recipient. But more often than not, we find ourselves in a situation where some transcript may take the next 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, and it's not good for business. It's not good for business. And finally, for as long as Nigerian universities shy away from cutting edge research that will impact positively, fundamentally, on this. don't see us progressing. Yes, we have that, but that is not all. How many are employable? How many of such graduates are employable? So rather than helping the society by educating people who will be useful to the society, we are compounding the problem of the society by mass producing graduates who only cram, always cram for the purpose of passing the examination. And after everything has been said and done with, push them out and you see the kind of mockery. I'll continue following them. And I know, because I've been a practitioner for the last 30 years, I've had opportunities of being a consultant at interview panel for senior registry staff, even for principal officers. And when you listen or you review the CV of a candidate who wants to be a professor, somebody wants, you look at it that this is absolutely rubbish, nonsense. But if we are ready, if we are willing, if we are obedient, we should be able to move out of this crass that we are in. Because with cutting-edge research, that university can sell the products to the world, to the town. A lot of manufacturing, they will buy it. You will make money. You will be less dependent on government. You will plow that money back into research. You will be able to retain first-class graduates who are, in the truest sense of it, first-class graduates, who will now continue in the same work, in the same mold of their lecturers. Without that, I do not see us going forward. The brain drain will continue.
We continue. This is huge coming from you. You've seen it all. You've worked in there for 30 years. So from what I can take from what you've said, technology is definitely one reform that you would do if you could to improve the convenience and life of students in campus. I like the idea you gave about using a single ID card to be able to access your hostels, to be able to access your school, library, and even do your banking, which sounds, which is, you know, incredible. And then, of course, you touched base around being able to retain graduates if they have great condition of service. You talked a couple about many things, and I think that's the way to go. And for us to be able to talk about this values, I mean, Uncle, you are a Lagos State indigene. You've been around Lagos State public service for over 30 years now. Do you have political ambitions to become something in Lagos State in the shortest possible time?
I do not like politics. I must confess to you, what I do interact with politicians, and I offer my advice in terms of quality service delivery. I've consulted for about three of them. I've had to write, I've even presented paper at some of their workshops that these political office holders. I think the truth of the matter is that I can never succeed as a politician that will go and beg people for what? That will go and beg people for votes, because I will not give you money. I will not. Because first and foremost, it is service. I want to come and do what? I want to come and serve you. I believe that I have some inherent qualities, value-driven qualities that would impact positively on the environment. So why should I pay
you to vote for me?
So for that reason, and for anybody who has integrity, honesty of purpose, and who believes in rules and regulations, such a person can never survive
the murky politics. What are politics
of Nigeria? Of Nigeria as it is. Well, there may be political appointment.
Yeah.
There may be political appointment, but that I will be begging people put posters on, but you never can tell if the power now feel that, oh, this person wants We can actually use it. It can be a what? It can be a face of integrity. They spend money, do their business, fine. But I will not canvass for votes. I can never canvass for votes.
Interesting. Interesting. Okay, so we'll move it up a little bit. I wanted to ask you this question before we wrap up today, and this is from you are highly successful in your career. How were you able to manage people's expectations, especially as it comes for favors from you? You know, people who say, we know this person is there, and then they had huge expectations from you. Some of them even entitlement and mentality, saying, okay, because we know him, he should be able to help us with this appointment or with this admission or with, you know, those kind of favors. Some of them might be unmerited. How were you able to manage people's expectations around that?
Well, if you come to me seeking favors with regards to admission, employment, I'm going to tell you point blank. I'll look at your CV. I'll look at my immediate environment. Do we need an additional personnel? If we don't, I'll tell you straight away that if I were to be in the position to do this, I will not do it because it will be a burden. The ones that we have on ground are not productive. So why should I add to that problem? If it's admission, the best question I'm going to ask you, what you as a father or as a parent, you must have passed through university or whatever. What do you think should be a pass mark? To me, a pass mark should be 50 over 100. If your child cannot score 50 over 100, that child is not worth, is not fit and proper for university education. Doesn't mean that person cannot do well in life. That person can actually do well. Let that person go to a college of education or go to a polytechnic where skills, practical skills are combined with
studies.
Yeah, hands on, that is it. I tell people that if any of my sons choose not to progress academically, I'm going to sit him down and ask him, exactly, do you think you can do with your brain, with your hands down? And if he or she is honest enough, I would invest in that thing.
Nice. That's the way to go.
How many citizens of Canada, how many citizens, when I say citizens, real white, go to university?
Not too many. True.
The bulk of those you find in their universities, just like UK and America, are foreign students.
Yeah.
Or children of immigrants who, because of their station in life, where they are coming from, feel that this new country is going to be what will give us the opportunity of survival and expressing ourselves. Those are the ones that you find in university. And they do what? They compete. They compete seriously. They compete seriously. UCAS is synonymous with University Committee of Admission to Schools in UK. Every one of you, you will just do your A levels. The moment you do your A levels, you'll be asked to fill form in order of priority. Which one is your first choice than that? They'll put all these things in the what in the central database. Your father does not have to be a multimillionaire or multi-billionaire. If your A-level result is fit and proper to make you an Oxford undergraduate, that's where you go. Cambridge, that's how they do their selection. After they have done the top five universities, they will now start doing what? Spreading the rest over. You cannot tell me that you go to Oxford and be, how can you go to Oxford and be? No. You cannot go to Cambridge because it's like going to Harvard. It's like going to Harvard. And you do not have the requisite qualification. So I'll tell them, and I also advise, I do a lot of advice. Now look, if it is university education, this person's doctor, Mark, can never give him or her medicine or any of the medical sciences. Even the sciences, this person can only do education. Some don't like it. But I will tell you the way and manner it is. I'll tell you, such students, if given admission, will drag others back. Will drag others back. And at the end of the day, their parents will still continue to feed them because they will not be able to compete outside after graduation. Third class pass. Third class pass. When you have first class that are still struggling, they will go for masters, they will have distinction, still struggling to get a job. Then they will start PhD, still not being able to get an academic career. Do you understand what I'm saying?
100%.
It's really better that you counsel, and I do a lot of counseling. I do a lot of counseling with parents. They come to my office, right? Sit down. Who chose this course for this child? You're not supposed to have chosen any course for your child.
Let the child choose what they want to do.
And then you now guide that this one that you're talking about, do you know the pros and cons? What are the other options available to you? And do you think you can thrive? With that child will start building confidence that, oh, my dad knows what
he's
talking about. My mom knows what he's talking about. So if I end up with this, I will still have a shoulder to lean on. Somebody who will be helping me, who will be encouraging me. Not that you just bring them to university and then you drop them there. And how they meander maneuver for the next 4 years is none of your business. That is not cool.
Yeah.
That's not okay at all, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. I kind of agree with what you've said. I mean, especially as it concerns, I think the whole education system in Nigeria needs to be overhauled, and people need to focus more on what the child or what the person in question, what they really want, what value what they enjoy doing, instead of, you know, the mantra of everybody going to university to study a course. Most people, 70% of people, even study courses that they don't enjoy or they didn't like doing. They just had to go to do it. So I definitely agree on that one. Uncle, thank you so much, sir, for gracing your presence on my talk show today, the Debo Taiwo Talk Show. It's a wrap. Obviously, if we keep, you know, if we go about it, we keep having conversations that we might not be able to wrap up, but I just wanted to keep it short and simple. Thank you so much, sir. Any final parting words, sir?
I appreciate this opportunity, number one, and I also want to say congratulations to you for starting something of this nature.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir.
Where you started.
Yes, sir.
Essentially, Nigerians need to have a rethink about what we actually want for ourselves.
True.
Either in terms of education, in terms of politics, in terms of economy, we need to sit down. There's no need to pretend about anything. When we sit down and we engage in proper conversation without mincing words, let's tell ourselves the bitter truth. It may be painful initially, but when we all come to the realization of truth that this is the best way to go about it, then things will work better.
Things will work better.
And lines will fall in places. People, all these things that we struggle for, people will not have to struggle for it again.
I agree.
That is, I want to believe that the kind of Nigeria that I want will happen in my lifetime. But if it doesn't,
we pray. We all want Nigeria to really be good. And that's the prayer, that's the hope, and that's the aspiration. And again, well, I want to say big thank you again, sir, for gracing your presence on the Debo Taiwo Talk. Thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of your evening, sir. Thank you, sir. All right, sir. Bye-bye, sir. Okay.
Bye.
Bye, sir. Cheers.